laptop. You all know I do not see with my left eye, and then you'll be complaining because I'm not seeing your hands. I can see you, Sipo, you know, because you're out here, you see. But that's right. It's just about one or two down. Thank you. That's all. Just a little bit. Yes, that's it. Thank you so much. All right. Now, I understand from the apologies, if we could hand over for a minute to yourself, Mr. Hurley.
Chairperson, I only received a apology from Ms. Sue van der Merwe, as well as Advocate Albert and Mario Buriani Mussini, who has made an apology.
Yeah, well, you do know I want to know the reason why. People don't just submit apologies.
I think it is EPC's happening, Ms. van der Merwe, obviously, not you, but
so,
yeah.
The one full apology, and the other one. Well, you did inform Mr. Ambassini about that they should be here as full members. Have you written a letter?
To
as requested 2 weeks ago to the chief whip?
Sure.
Not the chief, the senior whip on
the
party.
Not to do that to
no, well, I expect when I ask for something to be done. So I want that letter done, and I'll put my signature on it. I want it to be clear that this has been classified as a strategic full-time committee, and it is only the senior whip of every party that gives you their permission, I'm sure we all understand that, to miss a meeting to which you have been deployed as a full-time member. Now, we must start getting a little bit more disciplined. Thank you. Right. Now, with respect to the other items,
I have to absent myself to go because I have got to speak in the public works debate.
No, you see, that sort of thing is clearly understood with WIPS, and we just welcome the fact that you are here now. Notwithstanding, you've pinned your thoughts to an article. Which I'm not sure how I got it, but my secretary gave it to me, so maybe it came through email. And I just wanted to ask whether or not you had had the opportunity of conveying this to the chairperson of the subcommittee.
Madam Chair, we have a very good chairperson, and we have a very good working committee. I did my very best to make my points in that committee, and we all agreed that we could always make our points again at the portfolio committee. So I deliberately, just as out of respect for the chairman, did not release that document until we had finished our discussions.
Right. No, I do appreciate that. Thank you. I just wanted to know the status thereof. And without further ado, we're going to hand over to the chairperson. First of all, adopt the agenda without any changes and acknowledge that there are one or two members who are required to slip out with respect to the current budget debates or votes. But having acknowledged that, you do so quietly, can we have someone to adopt the agenda, please, propose the adoption. The Honourable Kobasa, seconded by the Honourable James. Thank you very much. Right, we're now going to ask the chairperson of the subcommittee, the Honourable Khadebe, to please address us on a matter. Let's get that. It is a report, I'm almost sure everyone has it, am I correct? Yes, do go ahead then, Honourable Khadebe.
Thank you, chairperson. One of the members of this committee, the delegation from the department, has the support staff, and everyone interested in this bill. Comrade Chairperson, I will say in the first place, it was a privilege to chair this.
Perhaps you should come here because I can't hear you because you're looking at me and not the mic, Honourable Chair. Yes. you just come in here?
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members of this portfolio committee, the delegation from the department, plus the state and parliamentary law advisors, the press, and everyone interested in the work of this portfolio committee. First of all, I'd like to thank the committee for having afforded me the opportunity to chair this subcommittee. What I have to say is that I was very privileged because I came across a group of people who were determined to engage and discuss issues robustly. And then at the end of the day, we know that we're coming from the different political situations. So at the end of the day, some of the things were not agreed, some of the things were agreed. But what is critical, Chairperson, is that the subcommittee has met four times. It has met four times. It was always early in the morning, 8, and then it has to deal with all the submissions which were made by the public into this subcommittee. But what we want into this portfolio committee, what is critical is that our point of departure was the issue of the submissions plus the response of the department to the various inputs which have come from the public. So what was very important is that if you can look at the four pillars of the report, they actually speak to the objectives of the bill itself, which is very clear, is to align the act with the code of good practice, establish the BE Commission to deal with non-compliance and intervention, to give effect or to give effect to government policy and at reducing inequality, defeating poverty and creating employment. Those are the four issues which are driving this thing. But what is very critical is that there was really a very broad consensus that this bill is a necessary tool to redress the past imbalances, but at the same time also advance the transformation of the economy as we are moving forward. And that day there was a very broad consensus around that. And then what is very critical is that, Chairperson, I think this is one that committee which is abnormal. It met four times and then it finished the bill by that time. By the time we met yesterday, we made the final touches of the bill, and then we have brought consensus. This is true. But there's only two things which will be coming out of that. One was very strong. I think that if you can look at the bill, it's set as it stands. There is a portion which deals with court-based black protocols. In particular, I want to ask you the definition. What is this thing? We find that that part as the state law advisor has indicated that problem. Now, I think that the DA was going to take a gap of that. When you look at that, at the page 3, there's this issue of, at number 3, the substitution for the definition of broad-based economic empowerment. There's no flag there. So eventually the DA took that and ran away with it. He said that where there's flag everywhere, we must remove it. And we left to it. God bless economic empowerment. Alright. Well, what is happening is that the aspect we didn't reach consensus with in the subcommittee. So the DA proposed that the black part must be removed and then must have broad-based economic empowerment. So that to say that they can reach the non-racial targets and the issue of the code. They will not reach consensus because really, we know that the issue of disempowerment of the past had a face. The face was a black people. The black people, then they were defined as colors, Indians and blacks and Africans in particular. So we could not reach that consensus that must be taken up here. And then the last part which we're also proposing is that, Chairperson, there's one country which was able to deal with national empowerment, which is Malaysia. Malaysia, as we know that on Saturday they had to go to the election. The critical issue in the election was the issue of revising the issue of the national economic empowerment, because they felt that the transformation is enough now.
that there's no need for such a law. And we know that even on the side of Cook, they were very strong on the issue that they must the sunset clause on the issue of the broad-based economic empowerment. But else, we didn't agree even on that, because really, even before sunrise, we cannot speak about sunset. Yeah. So we could not. But what is critical about the Malaysian study tour will be the issue that those guys have got this thing correct. We know that when you go to America, they tried that economic empowerment, they failed. You go to Brazil, they say they failed. Yeah. But seemingly, in Malaysia, they were able to deal with that. In such a way that the sons of the soil of Malaysia, they are everywhere, in the institutions, in the economy, they are running the economy literally. So we found that really it would be advisable for the Kokoro Committee to set a delegation there. So that before we table this thing in Parliament, we see thoroughly how they got it right. Yeah. Because when we dealt with the co-op bills, yeah, we also did go to Kenya. So that, because Kenya was setting the best practice when coming to the issue of cooperatives, there are certain things which we left there, which enrich our field tremendously. I feel that even here in this situation, because the other review of this bill, come the chair, which will come after 10 years. So we're speaking about 2024. And then if we don't get it right, it means that we lose another 10 years. So that's the report which is coming, being presented to the portfolio committee. And then we can deal with the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Hudebi, and thank you for a very concise report. And all members of the subcommittee. We're now keeping this bill within the main committee, as we all understand. So with the hands we had first were the Honourable James, followed by the Honourable McIntosh, Honourable Salah.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the Chair of the Subcommittee for his presentation. I'd just like to make two really important corrections. Our concern was not with the title of the bill, as much as it has to do with Clause 1CE, where in place of, in the original bill, it refers to, under E, it says preferential procurement. And the recommended change in the amendment bill says preferential procurement from enterprises that are owned or managed by black people, including the promotion of local content procurement. That's the proposed change. And our problem is quite fundamentally with designating very specifically enterprises that are owned or managed by black people. We've got a problem with that one because the individuals who are eligible for this are defining the scorecard. That is, the scorecard sets the eligibility criteria for what is black empowerment and what is not. And included in that scorecard, as you know, are ownership elements, the management elements, but there's also training, there's also CSI, and there's also philanthropy that's built into it. And all of the elements are in fact non-racial. All the training components, the education components are non-racial. But clearly the ownership one, the management, has to be black. So we don't have a problem with that. What we have a problem with is this clause which replaces what's in the scorecard. And therefore, we think it's utterly inappropriate to have it in the legislation as easier. So our recommendation is that the clause that said that are owned or managed by black people be deleted, because that eligibility is contained in a very complicated scorecard that we will look at some point. So just be clear, it is not about the title of the bill. The second point...
Yes, sir, very clearly, we were doing a little move here. The point you referred to is which section in the bill, which clause specifically?
Okay, if you look at
the definition right on page right. 1 or 2 or 4, rather.
I'm referring to, Chair, to the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Amendment Bill. And if you look at the first clause, section clause 1CE, it's line 28. Okay, does everybody have it? in the original legislation, all it says under E is preferential procurement. The amendment here, the preferential procurement from enterprises that are owned or managed by black people, including the promotion of local content procurement. We've got no problem with local content procurement. What we have a problem with is specifying in law, as opposed to using the scorecard to determine what black empowerment is. And therefore, to specify in law here is redundant and unnecessary. So we're suggesting that that are owned or managed by black people be deleted on the ground that black empowerment is defined by flexible scorecards.
Thank you very, very much. Can we just have Honourable McIntosh now?
Chair, I have a second point.
Oh, well, then you're welcome to pursue it.
Just one. I'm a little surprised to see the proposal for a study visit to Malaysia and elsewhere. That was never discussed in the committee. I got a note this morning to say that it's here, and I must say I don't think we need to visit Malaysia to understand what went on. It's a very interesting case, but I'm not sure about that.
Everyone at the same point now? I don't think there's a need to look, peruse the article this minute. Just receive it. Honourable McIntosh?
Madam Chair, thank you. Can I say not only thank you to Honourable Khadebe, but also to the technical staff who are assisting us in the committee. They were very helpful and constructive and helped us ignorant people. The concern I've got, Madam Chair, is, and I don't oppose the bill. I'm not opposed to the bill, but my concern is that in dealing with our nation, we have got a legacy which we need to address, but we also have a future. And the effect, actually, of what I'm suggesting in putting in the words before 1994 is to create a situation where somebody who turns 20 years old next year is not covered by this Act. In other words, they are completely non-racial in terms of the Act. But what it does mean is that anybody who turns 21 next year and goes on to be 65 or 69, like I am, then that person can be black. And in effectively, the bill then addresses those people. So that then addresses the legacy. And we have a terrible legacy. But what I believe is we've also got to say to South Africa, we also have a future. So the guy who turns 21 next year, he would be black if he lives as long as I do until he's 48. So he's got 48 years to benefit as a black from this bill. But the kid who turns 20 next year, that kid can say, look, we've got a legacy, it's a terrible legacy, but I'm building a future. I'm going ahead. No racial legacy around. And I believe that that is the spirit of South Africa. We have had a very difficult history, but we've also got a very wonderful future. And that, for me, is what it's all about. And I just feel, Madam Chair, that by bringing those two words, or at least the preposition and the date, we are saying to South Africa, we believe in the future, we believe in our people, we trust our people, and then we can move forward with it. But practically, Madam Chair, it's not going to have much effect on the bill, to be quite honest, because the guy who turns 21 next year still got a whole life to live as a black in terms of this bill. And that, I believe that at least it's, as I say, effectively, it doesn't detract from the spirit at all. But it does say to all our South Africans who are born free, to say to them, you were born free, and we recognize that, and we are letting you live free of race in South Africa. That's my appeal, Madam Chair. And obviously in my article I tried to motivate why I actually think black people are doing fantastically well. I'm not saying they've recovered from the legacy, but I believe in South Africans, and I think we're really doing very, very well in the new South Africa. Not that I'm saying you shouldn't have a bill like this to address, but I think we can send a message of hope, not only to South Africa, but to the world.
Very much, Honourable McIntosh. Honourable Salah, followed by Honourable Kobasa.
Thanks, Madam Chairperson. Normally, between me and Honourable Kobasa, who speak first, will say that this is the other one thought was going to say. Because we almost think alike. Chairperson, first I would like to thank the subcommittee for the drop weather. And it does appear that the work that remains for us to look at is centered around only two areas. One area is the issue of the black in the economic development. And the other issue is the issue of the implications of the 1994 people. We must have broaden ourselves to a bigger environment than the act before us and understand our constitution to be that of intending to build a non-racial, non-racist society. And if we move from that region, we will then understand that an act of this nature that we do can only be a temporary act until that situation of the past has been addressed. We might have to refill this act in the years to come. As a result, and this act is specifically intended to address the challenge we are facing today, which former President Thabo used to call a country with two nations, the first world and the third world in one act. And that was deliberately created by law of the party that was ruling this country before the ANC came to office. Now we are addressing all of that to try and create a fair environment in the economic arena where everybody, black and white, can be able to participate equally as a citizen of this country. Therefore, this particular issue should not be an issue that says if you address the issue as it appears in clause 1CE, you should read it in isolation. I just read E with C. When we look at C about broad-based black economic empowerment, that's line 15 of page 3. It says it means a viable economic empowerment of all black people. Viable economic empowerment, I speak. In particular, women, women, youth, people with disability, and people living in rural areas through diverse integrated socio-economic strategies that include, but not limited to, diversity that is those particular areas. And them becoming biased towards them because they were not included before. And I think it should be accepted as fact that this bill is intended to address the issue of the black economic empowerment, as it says, and nothing else. We cannot make it to look different. The issue of 1994, Chairperson, I think it's an issue that we must understand in the light of what I have already said, there will come a point where around this particular area, sitting here, will be the people that were born in 1994. Lords are not there for life. Lords are there to evolve with the society. As a society can use, laws get amended or repealed. This law is there to address the situation that we had in the past. A new law might emerge in the future, we try to repeal this one. And we should not live under an understanding that we are making something permanent for the life of South Africa until freedom comes. No, it is not true. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Salam. Honorable Kobasa?
Chairperson, the Comrade Salam has covered a lot of what I wanted to say about black. Except to add one, to respond just to one point that Dr. James raised, to suggest that we should exclude the word black in the bill because it would be covered in the scorecard. I don't understand why we should exclude that word in the main bill and just hope that it is covered in the scorecard. It doesn't make sense to me. And so I would insist that we don't remove that word. It's just critical that it is there. But secondly, Chairperson, I don't want to go to the aim of the bill. Joe has explained that succinctly. Let me go back to the 1994 issue and repeat what I said yesterday. That is dangerous, very dangerous to mislead the youth of this country, both black and white. Absolutely dangerous. And as a matter of fact, we are undermining their intelligence by saying that they must forget that there was a history from which they have emerged. The one group having been having parents and grandparents, aunts and uncles, and the sisters and brothers who were discriminated, oppressed, and exploited. The other group having been advantaged, been forced to become part of the oppression and exploitation. And here is a deal which says that let's remind all of these children, both black and white, of that history of oppression, discrimination, and exploitation, so that we'll never repeat that kind of history in their future. And for them never to repeat that history, we must begin now to redress that ugly past and correct it. Because if we mislead them and suggest that they must deny that there was such a history, we are asking them to repeat it in the future. And the repeat of that ugly history will be uglier than what we have seen after 1994. And no political party will be able to control the situation. The second point related to the 1994 issue, as Mr. McIntosh is alluding to, is that transformation is not an event. It is not an event, a big bang that happened in 1994, and all was well thereafter. The fact is, the effect of 350 years of colonialism and apartheid, the consequences thereof are felt today. Those consequences will be felt for another generation, possibly. And therefore, it, 1994 cannot be seen as an event. It was the beginning of a very long and hard process. And this bill that we're dealing with is making a fundamental contribution to that long and hard process that we must go into. If we achieve it within the next 20 years, well and good, we'll sit and review. And therefore comes with the sunset clauses that some people are talking about here. Every bill I want to submit has a tacit sunset clause, because it can be reviewed at a particular period in time and amended, repealed or amended, and so on and so forth. And therefore, it's not an issue that we must get ourselves faced with at this point in time. Thank you.
Committee, I'm going to allow Honourable James to come before you because you chaired that subcommittee. Honourable James, we're wanting to give people full opportunities because it is a serious piece of legislation.
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to try again. Let me rephrase. I think I've been misunderstood, partly because I don't think I'm explaining it properly. My difficulty is not the black. My difficulty is to reduce empowerment to ownership and management alone. That's my problem. So you can have a system where you prefer preferentially from a black-owned enterprise where all the employees are white males. You can do that. And that's the problem. And therefore, it's not about being black empowered, it's by reducing it in law to ownership and management alone. Now, if you turn to the scorecard chair, these are the elements. Ownership, management control, employment equity sits in there, skills development, prudential procurement, enterprise development, and socioeconomic development. So let me make a proposal. I would propose that we replace that are owned or managed by black people by the following formulation. Are enterprises that are, black empowered enterprises as determined by the scorecard. Because then, if you are black empowered and use the scorecard as a determining factors, then you can't have a situation where all of your employees are white males and you simply manage or owned by a black person, because all the elements are included. So just to restate it, even then there is preferential procurement from black empowered enterprises as determined by scorecard, including the promotion of local content procurement. So my issue is not with the back. My issue is with what it means when you talk to black enterprise. And Chairperson, on the other issues that have been raised, I just want to say very quickly that it's utterly implausible for anybody to argue that the legacy of apartheid can be removed just like that. Okay, I think it's implausible. And therefore, how we are covered in this law is by referring to people in terms of those classified as African, colored, Indian, and Chinese under apartheid laws. That's the definition, and its definition of advantage is linked to the definition of race as under apartheid. So I don't agree with Honourable McIntosh on that question. As for sunset clauses, this is subject to review legally, and we will have to be reviewed. So I also don't agree with the issue on sunset clauses. I hope I'm with my key on the first point. Okay.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I have to leave. Could I...
Make your point because you are speaking in a debate.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. You know, Madam Chair, if we're talking about a sunset clause, my amendment, by the way, I support Honourable James's proposal on that... CE, I think his suggestions are a bit constructive. But the reality is, my amendment, practically speaking, means that Mr. Honourable Salaam Tarbasha and myself are on the same page. Because all that my amendment will do is give us anybody who's age 21 will be able to be black. Now tell me, if you live for another 50 years, you'll be a grandfather then. So, but what are we doing by putting before 1994? We're saying we deal with the legacy, and Mrs. Honourable Salaam Tarbasha are correct. I know we've got to deal with the legacy. Heaven's alive. What honest South African doesn't want to do that? But by putting this in, we're also making a statement about the future. So it's not derogating from the purposes of the bill. In fact, what might happen, if Honourable Silas correct, Madam Chair, is that in 20 years' time, when the 21-year-old is 41, we may tear this bill away. Of course, there may be a new administration running the country by then, so it would then revise all the laws. But the point is, my point, Madam Chair, is that by putting in before 1994, we're affirming the fact that we have freedom, we're giving hope to all our young people, and we're telling the world, and in fact, there's a wonderful quote from Goodluck Jonathan's speech yesterday, which shows us that we have the confidence we can move forward into Africa knowing that we are proud South Africans and we look into our future. Madam Chair, I'm sorry I must leave you now, but I honestly think we will lose nothing by adopting my amendment and we will gain a great deal.
Well, we know you'll join us again at some time, maybe in the week, not necessarily today. Right, we're now going to come to Honourable Khadebe, as I said.
Thank you, Chair President. I'll start first with the issue of the report on the issue of the Malaysia torture. Comrade James, or Honourable James, is correct. When he says that it was not discussed in the committee, in the subcommittee, it is correct, 100% correct. But as it was shared, the subcommittee was always operating at a tight time. By the time we arrive, you know, every time we would finish, one press rush around. You know. So the decision, you know, the chairperson was very simple. Call another subcommittee meeting this morning, just to decide on us, or use this simple gadget to get about, convert the position among the members of the subcommittee. So there are four members of the subcommittee, of which three concurred. Three concrete, I'll email this thing to the Secretary as the record, and also to you as the record. Honorable Mark, the first one to respond was Honorable Twabaza. Okay, we'll support. Number two was Honorable McIntosh. Anglan King of Uwetu, Sinifisera Insanta, Umakati. What it simply says, Chairperson, there's no problem. There's not, my brother, there's no problem about that. We wish you good luck. That's Makatini, not McIntosh. That's Makatini. Yeah, he agrees with that. That's Makatini. And then Honorable James didn't respond to that. Honorable James simply said, we forgot to deal with the 50 million threshold issue, WG. Yeah, that's WG. No, he didn't even respond for that. You know, in English they say, silence means consent. In English they say, silence means consent. But yes, I must have heard on the side of caution. The 75% of the subcommittee agreed. But I thought that the silence was really agreeing, because silence means consent in English. First come first, before I give you the report. It's not true, but because really, it would have been unfair for the members to come here, to hit the traffic in the morning, just for the sake of anticipating. Chairperson, on the issue of, which was raised, on the issue of the success laws, Chairperson, Comrade Swabaza is correct. When he said, 1994, 27 April 1994 were an event. But what happened is that prior to 1994, those guys, we have to acknowledge that apartheid was racially based. It was racial based. That's why we had a national population register, which categorized the various classes of the citizens. At the upper, at the top, they were white. Below that, Indians. Below that, color. At the base, it was the black, in particular. The Chinese, they didn't know where it belonged to. Others like, what do you call it, those guys from Tokyo, what is the Japanese, they were honorary whites. Yeah, they were honorary whites. So what is critical change is that during that time, when these laws were determined, empowerment schemes were created Because it was not simply by an act of parliament that they were empowered. I can make an example of the land bank. When the land bank was established, it is very wonderful thing. It was the only bank which could give a loan to someone who's 70 years old. Because that loan could be transferred to the son. That was empowered. You go to any bank nowadays, 70 years old, and take a loan for 20 years, they'll never give you. Because the chance of you meeting the commitment is very minimal. At least the land bank could do that because they were determined that we know that if we have empowered Van Rooyen Senior, Van Rooyen Junior will take over from there. The thing will be transferred to him. So those were the empowerment schemes which were in place so that they can be empowered. So come to 1994, we have two nations in one country. That's why someone who was born in Sembo in 1994 and someone who was born in Kailisha in 1994, they are radically different people. Because that one who's in Santon basically won 99% will have 100% will have American aid. Number two, he'll have money invested on his staff so that he can get it or he can get invested in it. The one who was born in Kailisha in the squatter camp, the chance that for him or her to survive in the first 5 years was a struggle. Why? Because there was no access to electricity, no access to health care, no access to education, and all of so those guys are not equal. So you cannot say that by the method that they voted, their equality only comes when it comes to voting. But economically, they are not the same. That's why the government had to cover the issue of the feeding scheme. As we're speaking today, which areas are being targeted by the feeding schemes? The national nutrition program of the schools. Where are the schemes? It's plain those guys who are in the quarter camps because they don't have the means. But those guys who are in the bishop's court here, they don't need feeding schemes because they have an allowance. I think an allowance of what, how much? 2,000 a month? 2,000 a month? Those guys having kindness, they don't have that. So you cannot say that economically those people are the same. So how do we bring equality in? By coming the scheme so that we empower these people. We are not going to discriminate about it. That's why I always emphasize here, that those who already have their trust, unlike in the socialist countries, no, in the socialist countries, those trusts and foundations, they will have been nationalized. The government didn't do that. So no, you are okay with that one. Keep on staff. But then we have to empower these people. So I don't think that it will be right to include those people. Because we will have to equal in 94 if the government nationalized all the land trust owned by the white people. All the trusts they had in their bank account, it didn't happen. So it means that they are still far ahead. When you go back again, that's why my own remarking to surprise me. If you can look at the Union of South Africa, it started in 1910. 1994 was after 84 years. So it means that these guys were empowered for 84 years ahead of other people. Because it was then for Malad 1910. Because the others were separated. So we cannot say that one event made all the people to be equal. I think that we must advise to persuade my colleague that we cannot use that argument. The only argument you can use here is one. Is that that's why I insist, Chairperson, and I don't insist, I beg the indulgence of this committee, that let's go to Malaysia and see how they empowered their nation. That's why that for the first time in the past 56 years, the agenda for the last election in Malaysia was the issue of continuation with the national empowerment of what? But those guys who said that they must continue, they won. But the margin has gone down. Why? Because now the people are participating in the economy almost quite. So that's why it's that they no longer need that. But there are those who still feel that right, the party which is ruling there has ruled for the past 53 years. Because of that. So let's go and look at that chair. How did they get it right? You go to America, we know now. The president in America is a minority party. In the president, they are a large number. It means that the empowerment didn't work. You go to Brazil now, it's the same. So that's why I'm going to appeal to that. And then, as I said, that on the issue of honorable Jim, the apartheid was racial. That racial part has got a face. That's why when you speak about poverty, go to South Africa.
who's unemployed, who's poor, the face is usually black. Who's uneducated, poor, healthy, access to black is very clear. So there's no difference between a black empowered, enterprise and an enterprise owned by the black people. So here what we emphasize is that these guys were discriminated against. So we have to acknowledge in the country that this thing was wrong, it must be dealt with. But let me say that I know that there will be a comprehensive review of this act somewhere in 2024. Let's give it a chance. I think this guy is 1994, and I think by that time it'll be all right. They must not need it. But right now we need that check. Thank you.
I am giving people more time to participate, interact, and share our views. Honourable Salah, followed by Honourable Mabasa.
Chairperson, I understood Honourable James very clear. And I do not see the contradiction in the current wording of the bill from the scorecard. But if you read C carefully and slowly, it says to you, broad-based black economic empowerment means the viable economic empowerment of all black people, and I want to omit that area of in particular and go to through diverse but integrated socio-economic strategies that include, and very important, but are not limited to. The legal line will have to say to me what is the meaning of but are not limited to. And then from there we must go to E. E says not limited to preferential procurement from enterprises that are owned or managed by black people, including the promotion of local content procurement. It is not saying it must be. It says it must include this but not limited to it. Which means this will be taken into cognizance together with the scorecard and all other relevant necessary matters that should be considered in making that decision. So the scorecard, in my view, is implied in this particular, there's no contradiction between what is here and what the scorecard is saying.
Honourable Salah, Honourable Mabasa.
Thank you, Colin Chair. I wanted to entertain what the chairperson of the subcommittee is proposing, and I think his explanation makes sense to say going to Malaysia to discuss that will not have been worthwhile for the subcommittee to come just to discuss that item. I think that we stand to gain more by going to Malaysia and making that a very speedy decision so that we go there as soon as possible. Because when we make laws, we cannot afford to make flawed laws and then revert tomorrow and say, had we explored how Malaysia did it, we could have overcome this. So I'm seconding that we undertake that visit. Thanks, colleague chair. But on the other point, my colleagues, I have covered me. Let me not repeat anything.
Honourable members, I'd like to just ask all of you to just contextualise what is here that we're talking about. But at the same time, to appreciate there is legislation which takes precedence over secondary legislation, which of course includes regulations, etc. Now, when we say includes regulations, I'm looking at our, I don't think we've got the parliamentary advocate here at the moment, where, okay, Advocate Swan. Now, I'd like the parliamentary advocate, Swan, to give us the contextualization of the status of the codes within that. So we have the legislation, we then have secondary legislation, which we know are regulations. Codes fit in where? Just how serious it is, the consultation of books and everything. It's not something we have to, that's the point I'm making. Well, while our advocate, are you ready? Or would you like a moment? We will get a legal comment on that. However, my own understanding is that when it comes to codes and instructions that possibly at some point in time you may be Treasury issuing and others, they have to have been directly informed by what is in the principal legislation or the amendment to that principal legislation. Now if one or two of the inputs and contributions by members have referred to the issue of let's remove, let's review how E is put and possibly leave out the ownership and control and rather rely on the codes to expand upon that. That's one proposal which has been made in respect of that. The other one, which is not a code per se, but talks to the principal legislation here, which presupposes that those, or makes an assumption rather, that those born in 94, and I hope I'm not misrepresenting Honourable McIntosh, those born in 94, no matter what the race of the person, should not be covered by this. I hope I'm correct in my understanding thereof. And then, I'd like to ask members to contextualize very honestly. We had only yesterday an education debate. And to ask you, just take one country to the north of us, a neighbor, where we may certainly question good governance in that neighboring country, Zimbabwe, from time to time. However, the reality is the education system prior to the Mugabe government was not divorced from the whites in that regard. You had teachers train them, you know, to the same standard. You didn't have one set of matric passes for this racial grouping and another. In our own country, we actually did. We de-educated, we disempowered, we de-educated as part of legislation. Purely of education I'm looking at now. But the same can be said on a number of pieces of legislation, which in many countries in Africa to the north of us did not have quite the same entrenched racial legislation. And I'm only asking members to give greater appreciation of our historical context. I'd be the first to say we can't blame a lack of implementation on apartheid. No, you're right, we can't. However, we can't ignore the historical impact of the legacy of those born in 94. They're born in 94, which schools are they going to? Are the teachers effectively empowered? If not, why not? You know, and I think it's in that. So I think we are making some headway. I think that the fact that, Honourable James, you are already looking at ways of how to revise things, but yet to retain the essence, you've made us think a little bit. Because I don't think anyone here would disagree with you when you say, why should we have a company, black-owned, that actually is not doing a good job. It's totally disempowered in every other way. Of course we don't. You know? And it's helping us to think this through. How do we avoid that kind of situation? So I really want us to think seriously now. We are concerned with transforming our society, transforming our economy within our constitutional framework. So let us hear what others are saying, all of us, and let us see what it is that they are intending and what are the repercussions of that. We've already had contributions made in this regard. But I'm trying, and I am sorry Honourable McIntosh is not here, because he agrees on one hand with certain things, but has a very different view on others. And I think the same with the DA, that agrees on certain things and has an in-principle disagreement on another. But can we give this a little bit more time, so that we can really ask ourselves, first of all, is that the only issue we're talking about here? Is that where you hit a wall? I mean, that's the first thing Honourable can give me. Because clearly, there is a difference. Is there anything else within the legislation where you say, we hit a wall, there's no resolution? Can I turn to you?
No, Chairperson, as I said, that the debate is very robust. The issue of contention are those two. Those issues raised by Honourable McIntosh was very passionate about that. We could not persuade him. I think that there's no one who can persuade him around that. Number two, that those issues raised by Honourable James about this issue, it's very clear. We could not reach an agreement around that. So that's why then at the end of the day, we have to resort to the wisdom of the portfolio committee. But all the other things we are fine with, and then the amendments as proposed, the state law advisors and the parliamentary legal advisors, they take us to that. So that those things which are demonstrated in change are here. Those which are here are agreed upon the whole. That's why I said that our work is finished. That's why they don't need now to refer things back to the subcommittee. Because if we can resolve these two things and then take it, you know that, and then we can go straight here and then go move forward.
Just check with Honourable James. One stage when you first made contribution, it was quite clear that you were focused, I think, on, I hope I'm right, it was you, black, broad-based, black economic empowerment. Was it yourself or was it Honourable McIntosh, and rather wanted the black to remain within the codes?
Jefferson, in terms of the title of the bill, it's not a big issue for us at all. But what is the big issue is the issue I raised about reducing ownership, black ownership. That's the issue. But there is one further thing that we wanted some clarification on. And if I can just remind you, the issue around the minister giving permission to organs of state and public entities to set qualification criteria for procurement that exceed those set by the minister, that was an issue that required clarification, because we just simply didn't understand what that meant, you know.
Right.
So, but that, there was a disagreement over it. We wanted to be sure and understand exactly why it's exceeding rather than being less than, and why it's only restricted to the public sector, not the private sector. That is a clarification issue.
All right. On that note, let's first have Ms. Watts coming back.
Chairperson, on the issue of the codes, the Act makes it clear that the codes are issued by the minister and published in the government degree. What that then means is subordinate legislation which the minister then issues. If we look at even the amendment bill, it says out clear what the status of the codes are, and it says that every public entity must take into account the codes, so it's legislation that they have to take into account.
Secondary legislation informs others. Okay, so that contextualizes that one. Members, I think we have been asked at this point, and we can then come back to the two critical points again, to address the issues that the subcommittee have already identified that the legal people would have to provide a clarification on, and DGI, for example. And maybe we can first ask DGI exactly what the intention was there in the specific matter that the Honourable James has raised now.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members will recall that when we first initially presented the bill, we indicated that that clause emanated through the public submission, more particularly from the state-owned enterprises. The rationale behind it was that state-owned enterprises indicated to us that they've been at the forefront of implementing transformation, even pre the Code of Good Practice coming into effect in 2007. So they were saying that in terms of their advances, they have progressed very well in the sense that they were able to set their own targets for their specific sectors in terms of how transformation is to be done, what kind of empowerment companies they were willing to procure from. So in that regard, they were saying that, for instance, now as we're embarking on this new economic trajectory, they still want to have the ability to set higher targets, especially on cable projects where those budgets have a strategic national importance, you want to accelerate transformation. I think prior we made examples to this, the sector like the defense sector, the aviation sector, the space, we find that there's no effective participation of black people in those particular industries. So currently another example would be the issue around the role of Transnet. So they were saying that in those particular instances, they would apply to the minister to say that for the duration of the particular project, they would want to set higher targets in order to accelerate more effective participation, and then at the end of that, then that kind of a dispensation will come to an end. So that provision is informed by that basis to say that they want to have the ability, because if you look at the scorecard, members, it just talks about minimum. So we say that sector codes, sector charters, they have the ability to exceed. Hence, when we consider a sector code or we consider a transformation strategy plan, we would look at to say, what is it that you're introducing which is different from what we put in the general scorecard, which now are universal minimum standards. So that provision is informed by that and hence we say that it will also be controlled in the sense that there will be a proper application through the Minister of DTI to make sure that they consider all the prerequisites as to why we need to grant them that permission particularly. We also equated it with the status that we grant to state-owned enterprises under the B facilitator, where we say that if, for instance, a state-owned enterprise is strategic in its approach, then we would grant it that status in order to expedite and facilitate transformation by giving it that status maybe for 5 years or 3 years. Then put certain milestones that must be met. So it is in that context that that provision is there.
Thanks. Is that clear, or do you want to clarify it further, members?
Pretend that I'm really stupid. I mean, I don't... If you can explain this by giving an example, what advantage does getting permission from the minister to raise the standards give to a company?
Chase, I meet you. As we indicated, that this particular dispensation is all applicable to state-owned enterprises. Because we say that as government, we have one of the biggest levers, which is procurement. So we're saying that we can use that lever to accelerate voting participation in those particular sectors where we feel that there's a real big challenge. So we can't impose a blanket provision across all businesses, because in terms of private sector, the application of the code is so it's a business imperative informed by them making that decision to say we'll comply in order for us to have a favorable rating. But there's a legal onus on state on the present public sector to apply the code of good practice. So we say that that's where we can only use that lever of amendment in terms of judgment. Health directed it, but only state-owned enterprises. Because everybody else, in terms of the playing field, they will comply with the general scorecard. If you don't fall within the ambit of the general scorecard, you will fall under the ambit of the sector code. Then you will abide by the sector code. For instance, in example again, in the ICT, you go to the ICT charter, which has set a target of 10% on a tip, which is above what is the generic. But all entities operating in that particular sector are bound to comply with the target of 10%. So we think we've got no kind of regime.
Chair, may I?
Before we do anything, you see, if the chair is lost, I can't chair. Now, the reason I'm lost is we're not getting any pages, codes, anything. Now, I'm going to second the subcommittee. When, and I've done this with DTI before, please get us a reference that you're referring to, as members. I need to know where you are. Now, I want that clear. Honourable James.
Chair, my apologies. It's paragraph 5 in the amendment bill.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Just for my own education. So, we're talking about supplier companies. So, ESCOM puts out a tender, and what I'm asking for is permission from the minister to raise the criteria that the supplier companies have to meet.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how it works?
Okay,
then I understand that. Okay, that's clarified.
Satisfy you now, or do you simply understand?
I understand how that works. No, I'm not satisfied. I don't see why it should not apply to the private sector. So
that's the point. Why it should not apply to the private sector, you say. But thank you. I'll certainly think about that one. We have that clarification from DTR. From what I understand, Honourable Debbie, that was the only immediate clarification the subcommittee required. Is that right? We cannot, at this point, with the bill in hand, of course, we can refer to the legislation, proposed amendments. Now, all of this should have been labelled and numbered. It isn't. So I'm not sure what code they'll be giving us per se, because each thing that we distribute has to be numbered. But never mind, we will come to that. So this particular one, which was dated the 8th of May 2013, without page numbers, we haven't got, yes it does. Can we start there, and we'll start with our advocates, and I think here we have a joint operation in terms of the advocates, am I right? So you'll work among yourselves to provide the clarification thereof. So who are we turning to first?
I can just be committee chair.
Okay. It's I.
My name is Herman Smuts from...
Oh, yeah, Advocate Smuts. Thanks. It's good to know who the I's are.
Now, the first proposed amendment relates to clause 1, and it seeks to replace the two definitions of BBBEE verification professional and BBBEE verification professional regulator. What this proposed amendment seeks to achieve is to do not to refer to SANA as in the bill. The concern raised was that SANS is not the appropriate body to deal with this matter. That is the first proposed amendment. Shall I pause here or may I continue?
I'm not getting interruptions. We'll proceed. And in this case, I do understand that silence or no action with the hands means you understand, and we'll proceed.
The second proposed amendment to clause 1 seeks to refer to the classification and explicitly include the words Chinese, or let me read it completely, to read, black people mean persons classified as African, colored, Indian, or Chinese under apartheid laws. That's the proposed amendment. It relates to the amendment, you'll see that's on page 3 from line 3. The third proposed amendment to clause 1, you'll find on page 3 in line 13, and I ask for the committee's indulgence. It's a small error in the bill, and the proposal is that on page 3 in line 13, after broad-based, to insert black. The word black was inadvertently omitted from the bill. This rectifies the position. The fourth proposed amendment to clause 1 is on page 3 from 29 to omit including promotion of local content procurement. If I'm not mistaken, this relates to concerns raised by the National Treasury.
National Treasury was here. I thought I did see someone earlier. Is there a liaison officer or anyone? Oh, yes. Thank you. Right.
No, there would come to follow the proceedings in the committee. We have not received an invitation to come and make a presentation on this yet. We expect to get it sometime.
No, you're quite right. I think where National Treasury is referred to, it has been customary for us and good practice for us to have extended an invite. I think so many changes to our program, this got lost in the changes. I would apologize on personally as chairperson, but also you sitting right there almost off the radar screen doesn't help me. And certainly a little bit of proximity would help. So just come closer and we can just do comment on that again, Advocate Smuts. You're referring to Treasury there or Finance or something.
May I perhaps ask the Department to assist with the explanation for the amendment, Chip?
How did you explain this without understanding it? Right, DTI.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, what we're saying here is that in the initial original bill, we have included matters of local content and local production in line with the National Broadcast and some of the broader principles that government was talking about to say how do you reorientate BE to become more productive and focus on productive assets. But through the public comment process, National Treasury had made a detailed submission to the DTI indicating that it would be wise and proper not to mention matters concerning local content in the BEE legislation, because those are matters that would be administered and fall within their domain in terms of the broader procurement framework. So after considering that, Honourable Chair, we duly considered and said that then we will refrain from making reference to any issue that pertains to local content or local production within the BEE legislation, as per their advice to us. So merely we are conceding to what Treasury has advised us that let's steer away from mentioning matters of local content, because there are various other aspects and nuances that fall within what you talk about when you refer to local content, which we would not be able to effectively deal with as DTI, because it does not necessarily fall within our ambit. So as I indicated, we duly considered and we accepted their advice.
Any comment from the committee? No? Except all fine. Thank you. Right. We then move on. Clause 3. It is here, clause rejected. And then we have, of course, what that means, illegalese, I'm sure we say that particular one, that aspect is amended or repealed, because it's not accepted, and we move now to the new clause. It is replaced by, right.
So thank you, Chairperson. Yes, the new clause 6 to repeat what is currently in clause 3, but the new matters are contained in subsection 2, which reads, in the event of any conflict between this Act and any other law in force immediately prior to the date of commencement of the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Amendment Act, this Act prevails if a conflict specifically relates to matters dealt with in this Act. The intention is, there were concerns expressed in the submissions about the status of this think in principle act, but there be other legislation. And this provision seeks to give the necessary clarity that this act prevails in respect of any law that's existing when the Amendment Act permits us.
Honourable
this new addition comes on the issue of the demand from the large section of the submission instrument on the issue of the trumping provision. Remember, the trumping provision was in the what was taken to NADEC, it had a trumping provision, but when the final bill came out, it didn't have. So that's why the stakeholders they wanted that, but at the same time, not after what has been in the past, so that this will come when this bill starts to be enacted, to be implemented. That's the third aspect. That's what brings like that. Thank you.
This particular point, and I'm looking at the legal unit and just advisors and advocates, have you identified any legislation which would be affected as we sit here? Yes, Honourable Advocate Swartz. Is it Swartz?
Thank you, Chairperson. We did raise this concern in the subcommittee that we were not comfortable with the trumping provision in that we did not know what the practical effect of it is going to be. And at that stage, a decision was taken that the department could go back and give a presentation on the analysis of the legislation and how it practically will affect other departments, and they understood to do so and come back in 2 weeks' time.
2 weeks. My word, you generous. Who gave them 2 weeks?
The subcommittee chair gave them 2 weeks. We didn't want any mistake because we'll be venturing in various sectors, telecommunications, telephone, mining, and all those things. So we didn't want them to rush through. So that before we go to, with the bill close by close, we should have had that report on the bill. So that we can see the impact of this on those acts of the other transformative acts in the other sectors.
2 weeks from when?
One week.
Yeah, you see how these things have become so flexible. It's 1 week now. So we can stop talking about 2 weeks. Right. Advocate Striden, you're very quiet there, and maybe you have decided to reserve comment until the week has passed, or what?
Madam Chair, I speak so frequently in this committee. Whenever there's an opportunity to be silent, I prefer to do so, with your consent, Madam Chair. Needless to say, I'm sitting here collectively with my colleagues and the team from the DTI. May I seek your permission? I would like to make certain observations, but I think the time is not opportune to do so now. I would prefer to do so later. I would leave to my colleagues on my right to do the necessary at this stage, Madam Chair. But thanks for the opportunity in any way.
Yeah, you see, I do foresee certain things, but I remember when this popped up with the public service administration, I think it is legislation there, with the Financial Management Act, I think, or whatever, it was able to be resolved, and it did mean that there had to be an amendment to the Act, or vice versa. And that is why I think we've learned a lesson in the last 4 years about us, our legislation perhaps slipping up in one or two technical areas. We wouldn't like it to happen here. We want, once this bill leaves here and is adopted by the National Assembly, we want it to have a smooth passage. And that can depend on UDTI, really DDG. It's going to be very, very important that this process is effectively monitored here, this clause. We do want the principle of a trumping clause, but not at the expense of having this legislation thrown out. I hope I'm making myself clear. Right. Clause 5, are we?
It's a The next proposed amendment is in relation to clause 5. The first, it occurs on page 3 of the document. The first amendment is merely a technical one. The important matter is contained in paragraph 2, which reads on page 5 from line 8 to omit paragraph B. So that would mean on page 5 from line 8 up to and including line 11 would be omitted. The matter which is being omitted relates to the local content earlier explained by the department. The following clause relates to following amendment relates to clause 8, and it reads on page 6 in line 6, after information to insert knowingly, the provision would then read, and I'm reading from page 6 of the bill, from line 5, any contract or authorization awarded on account of false information knowingly furnished by or on behalf of an enterprise, etc., etc. It's just a clarification that's being inserted. The next proposed amendment in relation to clause 8 is that on page 6 from line 32, subsection 1 is omitted and substituted with what occurs on page 3 of the document. It reads, the Minister must, in consultation with the relevant Portfolio Committee of Parliament, appoint a person with suitable qualifications and experience as Commissioner for a term of office of not more than 5 years. B, the Minister must, for the purposes of paragraph A, provide the Portfolio Committee with 1, particulars of at least 3 possible candidates, and 2, the name of his or her preferred candidate and the reasons for the preference. I don't know whether I should pause here.
To say, I think that's quite a critical clause and amendment that's been inserted, and I just want to, the principle is clear, because it's a principle that the committee has raised before. But let's just get the chairperson of the subcommittee's comment here, for the benefit of the whole committee.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Again, taking cue from the submissions you have made, is that there was this issue that we cannot give the minister too much power because we are dealing with a person who is going to affect the economy of the country because we are dealing with the transformation. So the issue here was that the power of the minister must be checked, but it must be checked in such a way that it must not be, the life must not be made difficult for the minister. So the issue is that when coming to the appointment of the commissioner, is that the minister must go and scan the environment and get a person of impeccable qualification and reputation so that at the end of the day, at least he must come the name of 3 people with the qualifications, whatever it might be. But at the end of the day, he must also provide the committee with his or her preference. So why 3? So that we get double assurance that the environment was scanned, that to look at the people, possible candidates here there. And then that particular candidate then you say that I prefer this one. And then if the committee concurs, the Portfolio Committee concurs, and then that person is appointed to the commissioner. If the committee does not concur, he must go and look back between the other two and provide that one. I think that one is the gist of that amendment. Again, coming from the public hearings and submissions.
Thank you. The only issue that one may see a note of caution to consider and then to move on, obviously, is to say, right, the minister does this, he indicates that a new commissioner is going to be appointed. And he indicates this in November, and then provides us with this list in December. And then one comes back in February to do this appointment, you follow. Now, over the years one gets a feel for the practical challenges one faces. And I wonder if those challenges were understood. I think it's the committee's decision has always been there needs, with these appointments, we do need to get the involvement of the committee. So the principle, I think the committee has in principle adopted the form, but we also know the challenges of delay over what I call these so-called holiday periods or slack. Did you take that into account, Honourable Khadebe?
No, Jefferson, we didn't take that into account because we're dealing with an ideal situation. But I think that that account will arise. I think that what can be provided for is that what happens when the commissioner resigns. Let's say the commissioner resigns in November and there's no part. I think from the Act there's also a provision for the deputy commissioner. But then what must happen, it must be explicit that the minister in the interim, he can appoint someone in the commission who can deal with that. I think that it can work.
So everyone's in agreement from the subcommittee as well, quite obviously. I don't see any hands in that regard. Then we have on page 6, if you can continue then, Mr. Advocate Slatt.
Check. The third proposed amendment is that on page 6 in line 36 of the office to insert for one additional term of office, the idea is contrary to what is currently in the Act, in the bill, is to limit the reappointment of the commissioner to one additional term of office. Higher up, we indicated that term of office is not more than 5 years. The fourth proposed amendment is that on page 7 in line 21 of money to insert lawfully, this relates to the finances of the commission, and one of its sources would be money lawfully received from any other source.
Just before you continue, this issue of a term of office, it's clear it's 5 years, and you've also made it clear one additional term. However, one thing which is not clear, which sometimes in our legislation we have included, do we say for one additional term, not consecutive, or it doesn't matter if it is consecutive? The consecutive, and can they serve 3 terms as long as they are not consecutive?
No, Chairperson, the principle is that the term of the commission must be five years. It can only be renewable once. Once a person has served for 5 years, he or she will have the chance to serve other 5 years. But whether consecutive is immaterial, but only one. Because we know that the people will try and have relationship in the industry and then start, you know, people will look for that person to come back. So it's not right. Only one.
Right. Okay, we come to page 4 of these amendments. Is that right?
The next amendment is on page 7 from 22 to omit subsection 2. The omission here is to remove the power of the commissioner to be the accounting authority of the commission. The next amendment is on page...
Just a minute. I want to get my head around that as well. I'm glad finance is here, but Honourable Khadebe?
Comrade Chair, you will see that as we go down, we have to choose whether the commission is going to be independent or it's going to become a trading entity. So we agreed in the previous engagement that the commission will be a trading entity, unlike an independent commission, like the National Consumer Commission. So that the accounting officer here will remain the Director General of the Department. So this one was providing that he, in terms of public finance management, will be, he or she, will be the accounting officer. That one is out because when we adopted, when we go further, we see that we adopted the issue of the trading entity. So if the trading, this commission becomes the trading entity, the Director General of the Department is the overall accounting officer. So that we don't duplicate it. So that this commission will be embedded within the department so that we don't have to duplicate a new make a new infrastructure for this commission to work. It must be embedded there. And I think that in the office of the CTG, the commission will have a small office at the corner there.
DTI's offices probably hang from the ceiling, but do continue.
Proposal amendment number 6 seeks to insert a new subsection, and it's on page 7, after line 51, to insert the following subsection, and it reads a complaints contemplating subsection 1C and D must be in the prescribed form and be substantiated by evidence justifying the investigation by the Commission. In terms of first section 13F, the functions of the Commission are to, inter alia, to receive complaints and to investigate these complaints. It was felt in the subcommittee that they should be, in order to avoid them, Commission from being inundated with complaints, that it must be in the pre-sale form. In other words, there must be regulations, and secondly, it must be substantiated by evidence. The next.
We've had, they've not received this morning. As this will be a trading entity within the department, but of course with an independent, in inverted commas, autonomous commissioner, where would the appeal go if such an appeal crops up?
Chairperson, what we are dealing with here is the issue of the complaint. What we are doing here, we are insulating the commission from being endorsed by frivolous complaints so that they must be substantiated. But what is critical is that eventually the final arbiter is going to be Paja. If everything else fails, a person can go to court, successfully go to court and charge whatever decision. But because it is a trading entity, I think that within the department itself, the Director General will be the final arbiter in the department to deal with that.
Thank you very much. It sort of contextualizes it there. Carry on, please, Advocate Smuts.
Proposal amendment number 7 reads that on page 8 from line 28 to mid subsection 2 and substitute, and the intention of the this amendment is to omit the requirement that public companies listed in the JSE must provide the Commission with, apart from paragraph A, the information that may be prescribed, also any other prescribed information. The feeling in the subcommittee was that this paragraph B, any other prescribed information, is an extra burden on the companies who must provide the information. So that it's rephrased. Provision omits paragraph B, which occurs on page 8 in line
32. I understand the thing that the inclusion, the substitution of 2, replaces the entire 2. So, hold 2 out, amended, and then you're substituting the new 2. So, A and D for 3, no, not 3, 3 remain, of course. Yeah, right, thank you. We for proceeding then.
Proposed amendment number 8 seeks to, on page 8, in line 43, to omit all 13E2. This is a consequential amendment necessitated by the omission of clause, subsection 2 of section 13E. This is merely consequential amendment. I mean, the proposed amendment number 9, Chairperson, is proposed by the law advisors, and I must admit it wasn't in the discussed in the subcommittee. If you look at page 8, line 37, it reads, the commissioner may delegate any power conferred on him or any duty assigned to him or her under this act to any other person. The subject matter of the section is delegation. Lower down, in line 44, subsection 3 reads, a delegation or assignment under subsection 1 must be in writing. Now, what we propose is to omit the words or assign, since the subject of the section is delegation. And what consequentially the heading to the section will also have to read merely to delegation.
Can I ask the lawyers, why was that put in the first place, the delegation and assignment? People don't simply do these things frivolously. I'm asking yourself, our advocate Stein.
Madam Chair, I'm very used to making concessions in this committee and offering apologies. It might be opportune to do so again this morning. Needless to say, I beg your pardon. Madam Chair, needless to say, we are just fallible human beings and we all make mistakes. As we carry on with this bill, every now and then there's chopping and changing. Hopefully, eventually, the product is a sane and proper one. The motivation for this is simply that if we read subsection 1, the power involved there is delegation, not assignment. So if we speak in 3, of the power as if it entails delegation and assignment, we are simply being inconsistent, and therefore, on our part, we humbly propose the amendment, and we apologize for the oversight in the first place, but it's better to do that than to try and sweep it under the carpet and remain silent. We would not do that, Madam Chair.
No. Apologies are never necessary when one, owns up or indicates that an error, a human error was involved. As long as we correct it. That's the main thing. But we need to know why. All right, we move on then to point 10 here that you've made on page 9.
The main proposal amendment number 10 reads on page 9, line 61, to omit the words the commission may refer to and to substitute with the commission may, if it has investigated the matter and justifiable reasons exist, refer to the power contained in this particular subsection, in subsection 6, is of the commission to refer certain matters to SARS and to relevant regulatory authorities. The feeling of the subcommittee was that there should at least be reasons. There should be reasons for referring a matter to SARS or regulatory authorities.
Looking at everyone, Matt, Honourable Badebe.
Chairperson, if we can see that expanded part, was the issue that the commission has ready to investigate before it can refer. You know that if I can change your name and give it to SARS, you might be in all sorts of trouble. So we wanted the people not, so that when someone is angry with you from the commission, even without investigating, take yourself and show your name to SARS, and then you might be in trouble. So we wanted that there must be investigation before this thing is done, so that it can be fair, the process can be fair.
Takes me back to the French Revolution and the Lettre de Cachet. So we're going to make sure we don't have a repeat performance here, which is why we don't have guillotine, I expect. But page 10.
Thank you, Chairperson. The proposed amendment number 11 relates to to the provision which occurs on page 10 from line 7, which reads, the Commission may publish any finding or recommendation it has made in respect of any investigation which it has conducted in such manner as it may deem fit. In their comments, the concern was that what would be the case if the person is found not guilty or he or she has asked for a review of the decision to publish. And the proposal in number 11 reads on page 10 of line 9 to add the following paragraph, the current subsection becoming paragraph A, and you have the proposal here, shall I read it? It reads, a decision of the Commission to publish any final or recommendation it has made may not be put into effect. One, before proceedings for the judicial review of the decision have been completed or were not instituted within the period allowed, therefore. Two, if the Commission has referred the matter to the National Prosecuting Authority or the South African Police in terms of subsection 5, and no prosecution has been instituted against the person concerned. Or three, if the person concerned has been prosecuted and acquitted following the investigation of the Commission. Or four, when the person concerned has been convicted by a court of law following the investigation of the Commission, before such person has, in respect of the conviction, exhausted all risk of legal proceedings pertaining to appeal or review. This clause seeks to ensure that a person is not named in shame before any review or appeal has been completed.
I noticed you read all after each one or and, with the exception of that last one there, no prosecution has been instituted against the person concerned. And then it's just semicolon. So I just want to make sure we are correct with the omission of that or and. So there's no or and, it simply continues, right? And then we move on. I'm looking at this issue, Honourable Hadebe, of the period. It says here under the four Roman I, or one, I should say, that before proceedings for the judicial review of a decision have been completed or were not instituted within the period allowed therefore. Where's the period detailed? What period are we talking about? Can we first have, Honourable Hadebe, you happy for them? Right. Now, who here among the legal people, legal eagles, is going to give us a response? Yes, we have Honourable Swati exercise their lungs.
Thank you, Chairperson. The judicial review proceeds, that would be if the act is silent, partial will indicate the judicial review process, which is 180 days in which you can go to court. And once it is in court, the normal court process and that days will come into effect.
I hope that's quite clear to everyone who implements this piece of legislation, you see. Because period, to me, I must say, didn't mean too much. But as long as the committee all seem extremely comfortable to move on. Right. Of course, I can't see yourself, Honourable Waili, rather. But having to just look, you're fine with that too. Right. Okay. We then are able to move beyond that, of course, those insertions to your point 12 here on page 11.
Thank you, Chairperson. The proposed amendment number 12, well, 13 and 14, seeks to extend the days in terms of which, or the time period in terms of which a person may ask for a review of decisions. Let me read from on page 10 at the bottom, which is line 57. A person who has made a claim contravening subsection 1. Oh, it all relates to confidential information. The Commission has the power in terms of section 13L to use confidential information. But a person may claim that a part of the information is confidential. And sub 4 then reads, a person has made a claim contemplating sub 1, in respect of which the Commission has made a decision in terms of three, in other words, to use the information, may apply to a court for a review of that decision within, and currently the bill reads 15 court days. The proposal is to extend that period to 60 days. Within 15 court days, I've become aware of it.
On the minute. Now, let's just get our Honourable Chairperson of the Subcommittee to explain these quite significant extensions.
Right. Thank you, Chairperson. What is happening here is if a person wants to lodge that claim or that claim from the side of the court, we felt that 15 days is too short a period because there is very clear 15 court days, if we have to speak about basically 3 weeks of the court day. But what is this pressure? When a person has to make that decision, sometimes that person has to go and get legal help from the lawyers to establish that. So take for example, if someone is dealing with the intellectual property, then what will happen is that you have to go to the intellectual property lawyer, developer, who are very thin on the ground. You find that these 15 days can expire before that. But what is critical here is that it also took a leave from PAJA, access to land, to Justice Act. What is critical out of PAJA is that PAJA is providing for 180 days. So, but it says that once a person has to take that review to the court or that appeal to the court, that person has been aware of what is entailed on that, so it cannot take their oath of honor. Instead, it has reduced those things. Instead of quoting what they say that it must be 60 days, give him or her a maximum of 2 months to take this thing to court so that his or her claim for medical information can be used or not. So I think it was fair around that.
One just inquire is the relationship of the intellectual property to the BBBE. The relationship, you referred to intellectual property here.
I'm making an example here. Just a general example that when you go to the legal field of intellectual property lawyers, there are very few. But let's say that that claim dispute comes because of the exploitation of that in a company. You know, when we're dealing with black-owned entities, you find that sometimes there might be intellectual property involved. A person might feel that, no, that thing cannot be disclosed because once you disclose it prior, someone might expropriate that. So, but then, to get a lawyer who's in the field of intellectual property, go around Cape Town and count how many you get. You find that it's going to be so. If you give only 15 court days, really, that period is too short, it's unfair to that person. Actually, PAJA was speaking about 180 days. But we feel that before a person can go to the court for that, he or she will have got information beforehand from the commission, because the commission will have done an investigation and then alert that person that now we're going to use this thing in our investigation.
That would be the reason for 2 months. In fact, it's longer than 2 months, you see. It's, I think you're referring to court days. 60 ordinary days. Okay, 2 months. All right. On that basis then. No, this is what I understood. So you see, it's quite lengthy on that basis, because the court days are, quite substantial over the so-called holiday period when they close down. And that is an issue that's been raised before Honourable Khadibi with legislation that something that should have been closed off, say, before the courts closed, is then carried over for a further month and things like that. That is why I'm also questioning just the 60 days and whether it's court days or ordinary days.
Just to get comfort, I'll request, because I'm also not having the diary I was using on that day, I'll request the secretary to go and look at his minutes and then I thought it was 60 days when we would. But if they check the minutes, we'll cross check the minutes and see.
All right. Well, look, the advocates are saying, you know what I'm going to do? We're not taking a decision on it right now. I'm just cautioning on these issues. We must make sure that when we put in these days, we achieve three things. We create a reasonable time period on one hand, and on the other hand, we serve the interests of justice. So we need to ensure there is a balance here and not ensure that it's lost sight of. So I'm making that as a general thing with days and court days, etc. But if we can just make a note of that and move to 13, it's got the same sort of issue, hasn't it?
May I just add, Chairperson, it's precisely as the Chairperson of the Subcommittee said, we took the view from Paja, which in fact gives 180 days, and between the Department and the Parliamentary Law Trial and myself, we grappled with the question what would be a fair number of days, and that's where the proposal of 60 is actually court days, and 30 court days and 40 court days was proposed to the subcommittee.
After all these days, we're not taking the decision. We understand that, and then we're just going to engage further on the matter, because I think the confidentiality element is even half the number of days. So, you know, this is good understanding of what we're intending to achieve here. But we'll come back on that. So let's just come back on that particular one without changing it. And then purely on the last point, though, on page 12 in line 36.
The proposal is on page 12 in line 36, after not to insert the words that occur. The clause is on page 12 from line 36, which reads, any person convicted of an offence in terms of this act may not, for a period of 10 years from the conviction, contract or transact any business with any organ of state, public entity, etc. The intention is to, as the bill currently reads, there's no time limitation. The person would never be able to, this would sit time limit on it.
Very clear and in line with the decisions taken. Can we then move? That was a blank page there, so it looked like that was the last one. Am I correct? Not correct on that one. Okay. So it's to Advocate Smuts on that one and Advocate Swartz immediately, the two of you. And let us. We do have a tea break. On the other hand, I'm just consulting the agenda that we adopted to ensure we don't simply go to tea break and then we're concluded. After that, we would then have had the briefing on the third report of GDI, financial and non-financial. Where is it? We then continue, but the point is what we could do is have a tea break. We've got many minutes to consider and have a tea break, 5 minutes or so. Just grab some tea. I know many people would like to conclude early. So 5-10 minutes and then come back. We'll use this time to discuss this issue of the dates as well.
No, Comrade Chairperson, I think the majority of the rules have. Honourable Gawala said the 30 court days, the Secretary said court days, the parliamentary, so it means that I'm having a slight problem, but the problem is that I'm not having my diary yet. But let's rest court days.
If it is court days, all I'm saying is I would like to discuss it as well, informally, and that's all. So that's that. We're not taking the decision today, we're just moving forward on principle. Now, there are two issues here. Tea is getting cold, but if you're used to having cold tea like me, that's also not a problem. It's been there already for an hour. But I'm just saying. So now we can go on. How many minutes have you got? We can go on for the minute. And then you, as we close off and adjourn, you can have your tea as one view. Honourable Jane?
Chair, it's all your fault that the tea is cold.
Well, it's not ice cold, it's just that pleasant warm, which apparently is very healthy, rather than ice cold or too hot. Honourable Hadebe?
Honourable Chair, I think let's dilute the minutes and get them through. And then I think that would be fair.
Has everyone got their minutes? Right. Members, what the committee, I can see that faintly, I saw some hand convalesced, but I just want to say that some of you may be asking, where is the Hansard? You already received that. So let's not have that debate. Now, which advocates had their hand up?
Give me that question. Maybe be excused.
Allow us just to complete what we're doing, right? Now, Advocate Smuts, you and Advocate Swartz, is that right? Should go to your offices and having studied some of the points that have been raised, especially that one which we spoke about, which you referred to DTI, the subcommittee on the clashes, etc. Because having got that, you may want to be quite sure you understand the legal implications of those clashes when they arrive. So I'm sure you've got work to do. Thank you very much. Thank you. Right. We now come back to ourselves, and we go back to the 15th of February. Now you can see why we wanted. Oh, DTI, yes, you see, you're highly disciplined, sort of professional K-digger. Yes, Mr. Vicordo, DDG, you are certainly excused, you and the Chief Director here as well. Thank you very much. You're both excused. And thank you once again for the input you've made. I think we should have just alerted you as to when we're going to be needing you. And I think that we can do that telephonically, if you like, rather than to delay you. So we've got Mr. Zikudo, Ms. Masachwa. Is Professor Link here? Right, and we do, of course, we said Advocate Stridham already. Thank you very much. All right, February the 15th. Please, one, page 2. Some of these you should certainly retain for your notes on the spiel of the colloquium, as you can see. Page 3. And please check the register against what is in the minutes. Page 4. You know, just remind me to raise this issue. The first generation of bits are not in compliance with the Constitution. We other matters arising. Right, and immediately we'll do that right now. I see every lawyer has taken the advantage to escape. Yeah, just when we needed them, of course. But I wondered which, you know, the bits, if they're not in compliance with the Constitution, what their validity is. You see? So I think that we must just refer this to, is it Advocate Van Lerwe on this issue, and get a response, which we'll deal with at our next meeting. Okay? Right, I notice here that some of the apologies are not noted, and I happen to know the Honourable James always notes his apologies. Now I will say, fine. Can we then move to, come on to propose the adoption? Thank Honourable the day be seconded by Honourable Mabasa. 20th of February, a Wednesday. You see, what I'm not sure here when I saw this, which was my one query, it says consideration of minutes dated. I hope somewhere here we know if they were passed or not, because I didn't see that. It doesn't matter. You see, the moment you put a bulletin there, consideration of minutes, we need to know some in the set of minutes. Yes, I'm saying I didn't see it. Ah, there we are, right. Opening and welcome, page 2, briefing. Lord Bates, make a note that you ought to be keeping these minutes. Page 3. That was the NDA as well. And page 4, the chairperson submitted minutes dated as amended. It was seconded. Right. So it's all in line. Thank you. Check for attendance register with the minutes. Someone to propose adoption there. Please, Honourable Jane, seconded by Honourable Kwabasa. Now, let's have the 22nd of February, which was a Friday. And on there we had page 2. The only thing that I was a bit, I wasn't too sure of the spelling of Prabandini. Is it Glini or Dini? Do you remember that? Yeah, correct. Okay. And then page 3. And you see why I am so confused. We submitted the amended minutes, remember the 13th, and then they were adopted. And then we do them again. See what that kind of, I mean, this is where some of this confusion arose. If you go back to the previous minutes, you will see we considered the minutes. Remember? And we adopted them. And then when I went through them, we're adopting them again. Do you see what I'm getting at? So we have to correct this. We can't adopt them twice. So where's this now? On page 3 now, page 3 of our, I think the 20th of February, the 22nd, that number 5, it's not here. You know, we need to get that out. It was considered and adopted. So please delete that. Right. And then the resolution. Okay, and closure. Then the check for diary here. I'm not sure why I didn't sign. Did I even chair this? I certainly did. So I think whoever is dealing with this should just check all the time. The DA, I see Jane, you not signed either.
But I would
have. Yeah, no. So I suggest you also just wash it there. Right, 27th of February. Yes. Let's have the adoption with the amendment. That is the deletion. Honourable Mabasa, seconded by Mabasa. All right? And I think let's get Dr. James to be signing as well. 27th of February, Wednesday. Almost everyone in attendance there again. Short meeting. Right, a transcript here from the banking associations, etc. Page 1, page 2. Pardon. The committee deliberated, closure. Just one issue I'd like to raise when we adopt this. Do we have someone's proposed adoption of Wednesday 27th with the attendance? Honourable Mabasa, seconded by Honourable James. The one issue here is the National Credit Regulator, etc. And I think most of us have seen the statements made by the National Credit Regulators Commission plus in the media, etc. The media, among others, are wondering exactly what the committee's position is on this. And as you know, we did engage them. We developed a position with respect to unsecured lending, per se. But I think there may be a need for us to revisit all of us the transcript and try and just revisit it briefly for half an hour so that we are able to take it forward with a decision and a position that is noted. Because it's not easy for us to comment as a chairperson when either position that we've taken is not clear as a committee. I'm sure you all understand that. So who do we have to adopt those minutes? Everyone was present. Oh, we've done it. Okay, then. 5th of March, Tuesday, next set of minutes. I hope we're coming towards the end. We had a lot of apologies that day for some reason. Tuesday, page 2. Right. These are the minutes you should also keep in relation to the IPLAB. Page 3. Page 4. Yes, you will see there, I'm not sure why we've got crosses here. Now, the reason I'm asking for this is we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people, 7 with the chair signing. That's the quorum. That was the quorum. And the reason we're asking that is because we took a decision. Yeah, we took a decision, you see. And we can't take a decision without a quorum. Can we have someone to propose the adoption of those minutes? Honourable Khadebi, seconded by Honourable James. Wednesday, the 6th of March. Present, we have quite a few people there. A colloquium on administered prices there, meeting, and page 2. Page 3. I'm just going a little bit slow here because of the point 10 on page 3. You'll remember this bill had gone to the House and etc. Our earlier position, we did not agree that it go back to the House of Traditional Leaders. Do you remember that one, which we've now passed those minutes? Then the report came back. And it's important that we follow the process the committee took and the reasons why this changed on page 4. Okay? Indicating very clearly then that we would pursue this, having re-examined the matter on culture, and at least allow them it to go through the technical phase. Page 5. You're still on that, right? And then page 6. A lot of people were present. I don't know about Mr. McIntosh. Honourable McIntosh here. Was he present? Okay, just make sure we've got that down, okay, in the future. Right, and Oriani Ambrosini? Honourable Oriani, was he present? We have somebody to adopt that set of minutes for the 6th of March. Thank you, Honourable Khadebi, seconded by Honourable James. The 8th of March. We had quite a few apologies there, right, in attendance, opening and welcome, right, page 2. and page 3. Interesting, some of us may have forgotten we have the medical devices industry here, which are rather unusual, and also the input part for the song. Is that Kunta? Is that how she spells her name? With a U. I'm just asking. I think we all... All right. Great. Page 3. Can we have somebody who was present to adopt the agenda, propose the adoption of the minutes for the 8th of March? Subs Mabasa, Adebi, Mendemuva, he'll do it. Thank you, Honourable Mabasa. Honourable Hill Lewis, do you agree with what was said there in the minutes? Because I see here you were present, but can't remember them right. Honourable Hadebe proposes, seconded by? Okay, right. Input by Follow Song. And just put apologies here. We really have to, because these are your... But Hadebe, wasn't he here? Yeah. Okay. The 12th of March. There were a number of apologies again on the 12th of March. Page 2. That must have been more or less when we were coming to the end of the MCA engagements. We then had Kuhn from the German Embassy and the different issues. Right, can we have someone propose adoption who signed the register and was present? Quite a few. Thank you, Honourable Mabasa, seconded by Honourable Mabasa. Right. Let's see who didn't. Mabasa, right. Just a minute, according to this, you didn't sign there. Let me check if you were present. You were absolutely absent on that occasion, Honourable Mabasa, so you won't be able to second it. The 12th. 12th. Right. Honourable Mabasa, a proposed. Can we have somebody who was present to second Honourable Kadebe? Right. We then move to the 13th. The apologies there, NEC, quite a... Where are the apologies here? Present? Where are the apologies? Well, what could have persuaded people? I don't think we ever had a full house, so of course I'm a bit surprised that there's no apologies here. Right, page 2. Right. Page 3. Page, the attendance register. Well, anyone here can propose this adoption. Everyone was present, I see. Right. Honourable Mabasa was present, yes. Seconded by Honourable Hadebe. Right, the next one. Right, we've got a number of apologies here. So please check that. 13th of March, Wednesday. Page 2. Page 3. We have someone to propose adoption. Thank you, there be second of I, Honourable Barsa. Right. Now, of course, we can't make anyone propose or adopt, but it would be quite constructive, Honourable Hill Lewis, if during a period of 10 sets of minutes you were able to confirm one of them, unless there's a huge problem with them. But as I say, this is not a compulsory issue. No, I was saying that when it comes to the minutes, ranging from 15th of February until now, you can see we've had our 10 sets of minutes here, of which you were present at all but three. And I'm saying that while it is not compulsory for anyone to second or propose, it is part of being, I think, collegial to, if you do agree, to adopt, second or propose. But that is if you did agree. But as I said, it's not a compulsory requirement of membership.
Okay, great.
So I just happen to know that here you are definitely present. On the 19th of March, you were page 1. That was a National Centre for Cleaner Production, okay, of energy. And then page 2. Right. I'm just looking at this because I wasn't here for the whole thing. But on that basis, can I have somebody to propose adoption? Thank you, Honourable Hill Lewis. Seconded by...
See how collegial I am.
Yes, I know you're definitely here. And thank you, Honourable Kubasa. The last set I pick among problems to be adopted or put forward is the 20th of March. That's the public hearings on the triple B, double E. And I must say something I should note. This is the first time this year that we have had 3 meetings with full attendance from February to now, you know, the whole time this year, even up until today. And they've all been for the same thing, the broad-based black economic empowerment, and that must send a message to us. It doesn't have to send a message. I simply think that it indicates the significance. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Is that AQ risk verification? And then, yeah. Right. And then the closure of that. Now, on that particular occasion, we had a number of people present. So please, can we have someone to propose adoption? Thank you, Honourable Hill Lewis, seconded by Honourable Kobasa. Members, you've done an enormous number of minutes, and what is, I think, valuable is that we have only had one set which was incorrect, and that was the double adoption. We then, I'm just putting to you on a formal basis, but I'm just looking here, if this is a budget vote, it's a draft, so I think we can relax, we're not going to adopt it. I'm just looking at all of you here to say that we have to adopt this. You know, not today. And we're due to meet Friday. Now, I do need you to remember that we are taking this to the House on the 15th. And I look here at the first thing, we've got no recommendations that I see. I'm sure you see that yourself. The concluding remark I can certainly add to, but if you're coming along to this particular issue here, I think some of the things that you've got to recall and refresh your memory on. What is the priority that every party has agreed to? It is job creation. Does this budget, is it intended to create jobs? That's an issue you have to ask yourself before you take a decision or make a recommendation. This is the budget with this 2013-2014. Secondly, in the matter of good governance, has there been good governance all around? Three, in the matter of trade, we're already querying this issue on this, remember, we are raising that on a legal basis. Trade per se, what is our priority in trade? Our priority is to export and regional integration. And you should be able to ascertain what actions through the strategic plan are intended to underpin this regional integration. The next point is on the industrialization, which is considered a flagship mandate. And this plan, what is its core intention? It is intended to re-industrialize for what purpose? What purpose? It intends to use the instrument of manufacturing, that particular instrument, to create a production of every kind. It is also intended to add value. These are the questions you'll need to ask. Is this here, this draft plan and the budget, will it be able to add value? Will it be able to promote that? Will it be able to increase industrialization? What are factors that would inhibit this? Are they being dealt with? What is the budget? And the budget should be doing one thing for every person here. When you look at ETI's budget, you should be able to write its policy, and you should be able to write its draft plan after looking at its allocation. And if what you write is different to the draft, then you ask the question. So if it is intended to reindustrialize, if it's intended to create jobs, is it creating jobs? Do you think? And I think we must all be honest about that. Search. We've got today and Thursday. We are going to complete this on Friday. We have to. So I propose, and I'm talking to everyone, please put forward your recommendation to the Secretary for consideration. And they'll be in our text with your name and party. And please make sure that those members not in attendance today also get that information. We would like all the parties to be able, if they wish, to contribute. The conclusion I will have for the Secretary tomorrow to distribute as a proposal. Is there anything you wish to say, members, before we close off this draft and just say it's simply a draft to study? Honourable Mabasa? Program. Yes, Honourable Hildes.
I had my hand up under the minutes, but not to worry. There were certain requests in the hearing on the BBBEE that we get written responses from participants, presenters. And I may be mistaken, but I haven't received any of those written responses. I would very much like to receive them. I'd like to just follow up on that, please.
Mr. Herman, you're aware of this. Where are we in the pipeline?
Chair, we have received the response from TTI in connection with the SQUAM entities in digital form, which are distributed to the committee. We have not received, and obviously we have received a bulletin in response to that. We haven't received any other response from other stakeholders during that process.
All right, there were many people we asked written responses from. Can we do a follow-up? I think that's fair. We must have a follow-up. There isn't anyone here who doesn't want that. And fortunately, with BBBEE, time is on our side to a degree. But I don't think we should intermit that to anyone making a response. We should try to call for these responses by next week. Right. Yes, Honourable Abasa?
Another point raised by Member Hill-Lewis relates slightly to minutes. I wanted to commend the secretary, and the team that does minutes, that it's an exceptional, well-done job, and to say keep it up, I mean, to attend to so many minutes with a few mistakes, it's well done.
Very much. I am looking at a list of a new program which I did have posted status for everyone, and I'm just trying to get it out here for you. It's here it is. There are a couple of them. Now, we must make sure everyone has them. We were originally allowed to meet every day, all day. Okay. And that was revised. I got the revision yesterday. Some of you may have seen me walking up and down in the house, at which point I lost both my iPad and my handbag, but discovered both at the end. But to try and ensure that the reason why they had agreed to this was so that we could complete legislation. So what I'm handing out to you is in fact areas that deal with this. I'm just looking for the copy, but I can have this email to you. Wednesday, it was the EPC public works that we have met. Essentially, all EPCs we may meet on those days, with the exception of our own debate. We do have to be present at all plenaries. Now, when you look at that, it means Wednesday the 15th, we've got our budget debate. Then, and we are hoping it will be a plenary, but at this stage, I don't know if the whip has heard anything. The 28th of May is National Treasury, which is a possible no. Certainly, and I say a possible no. On Wednesday, the 29th of May, there is a plenary. I'm not sure if it's in the morning or the afternoon justice. And so we may not meet then. And there's an EPC in the afternoon. On the 31st, we may not meet. It's a plenary rural development. So you'll see there are four no's on this program here. And I will indicate to you, I think, have you done the revised program here? No. The secretary will have to revise the program here and find a place for us to sit, preferably in the new assembly wing, because one will be up and down. So get those dates right. 15th of May, no committee meeting, absolutely. And 28th of May, National Treasury EPC, those involved with directly in that cluster. And Wednesday the 29th, no meeting in the morning. And Friday, I don't know if that's the morning or the afternoon, I assume it's in the morning, no meeting. But you will get this plus everything else. And plus a revised program, and I think we should put it in yellow, highlighted, so members can see clearly. You will see from here that you will be starting with the SEZ. Very soon, and towards the end of the month, it was our intention to consider the NCA bill that was here to deal, close it off one way or another. The SEZ will start on the 17th of May, 17th, 2 days on the Friday. But NCA and the briefing on the lotteries bill, we'll have to do that in the afternoon if we're going to proceed on that basis. So I won't say more on this, but I think we have virtually finished with the BBEE. We will meet again on Friday, and we should be able to close off the draft budget and continue with deliberations. I don't know, Honourable Hadebe, I'm inclined to think you have closed off the subcommittee. I certainly want to rule that it's over, and you can discuss this now in committee in future. Is that correct? Right. There is no subcommittee for SEZ. There is no subcommittee for SEZ. And at this stage, there is no subcommittee for Lotteries Bill, Amendment Bill, because we're all too busy. So on that note, unless anyone wants to raise a question, I would like to adjourn until Friday.
Chair, on the BBBW Amendment Bill, we're going through this document which suggests the proposed amendments from the subcommittee. After that, are we still going to do a line by line of our own?
You know, that is a process. We have to do it clause by clause. So what we're doing now is just dealing with the pertinent points. But to close off and adopt the bill, we must go clause by clause. And then some of you will remember, once we have adopted it, we actually have to get it back in from CREDA to confirm there are no errors, which may require another adoption. I hope everyone understands that. And that's because of the technical errors that creep in. I hope I'm very clear. And Honourable Kadebe, I think you said we can only be finished with this wing, the way you've outlined it.
Chair, what is happening? Honourable Mabasa has supported the issue of that study tour. So the study tour was targeted on the leave days, immediately when we close in June, when we close. So it means that when we come back in the second term, the very first week we can finish everything off.
That is the proposal that's come up, okay, and would require us all to look at the NCOP program, because this is our... the closure of the year. So can we leave that there and process it in the manco? Right. On that basis, thank you very much for your time. The meeting is adjourned. Until Friday, in which we...